Meanwhile, in the NBA, the Lakers will be without Avery Bradley, but now they will have Dwight Howard. Dwight telling CNN he'll join the Lakers in Orlando for the restart. Howard also said he will donate the salary he earns in the bubble to the charitable initiative Breathe Again. Also, just want to note this. The Wizards just announced Bradley Beal will not be playing in the restart due to his injured shoulder. NBA champion Kendrick Perkins with us now. Perk, always good to have you part of the debate. Max, you're up first here. Now that Dwight Howard's playing, are you still confident about that pick, staying with your Clippers?
Yeah, I'm staying with the Clippers. Wire to wire, I've been with the Clippers since they got Kawhi. Said in the preseason, wherever Kawhi goes, had he stayed in Toronto, that's the championship. If he went to the Clippers, that's the championship, and that's before they dealt for Paul George. So I'm confident about it. But I'm not going to pretend this ain't going to be a grind and a great series against the Lakers. And Dwight Howard's inclusion is a big deal. Like, the Lakers, in fact, I think match up better with the Bucks in certain respects. When you look at the job Kawhi did on Giannis in last year's playoffs, you funnel him towards those trees, you know, toward Gasol and Ibaka and those guys. Well, you funnel the freak. If the Lakers got to the finals toward not just Anthony Davis, who doesn't love playing the center position, though he can play defense and block shots, but JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, and that's you know, kind of the formula maybe. So I think Dwight Howard is an important role player, and his addition, or rather lack of subtraction, is significant, but I'm still taking the Clippers. Did you hear what Patrick Beverley said, y'all? Did you hear what he said about the restart? He's playing every game. A game. Like everyone he plays, point guard, as though they are the best point guard in the league, right? As though they're Steph Curry. He's playing every three like it's LeBron James or Kevin Durant. He's playing every team like it's the Warriors with KD. That's the mentality Patrick Beverley brings. That's the mentality Kawhi brings. As Stephen A. says, they got a lot of Rough Riders on that team, right? So even a guy like Shamet, who's got COVID, and who they're going to retest him, he's got to test negative in a certain amount of time, twice and 14 days from now and all that. And I think the odds are he'll be available by the time the conference finals roll around, let's say if they get that far. The fact is, role players like that are important. He can shoot and space the floor. But when you have the kind of mentality the Clippers had, led by Kawhi Leonard, but also with important pieces like Patrick Beverley, that's who I liked in the preseason. That's who I liked throughout the regular season. That's who I like in the restart, even though Dwight Howard has decided to play for the Lakers.
Well, first of all, I just think it's important that I sit up here on national television, and regardless of how much I disagree with you, I want to give you a round of applause because you have been absolutely right. You have been very consistent. You said it in the preseason. You said it at the beginning of the regular season. You said it during the season. You say it now. And for once in your life, you didn't waver. That's a round of applause right there. I mean, stop the presses. Having said all of that, here's the reality of the situation. When I look at the Los Angeles Lakers, here's the deal, Max. I know that your point makes a lot of sense that the Los Angeles Clippers, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they won it. But I'm not jumping off the Lakers bandwagon because I think that LeBron James and Anthony Davis are two of the top five players on the planet Earth, period. I think they're two of the top five players in the world. And I think in the sport of basketball, when you got two guys, by the way, who are rested and healthy, that goes a long way. But here's why Dwight Howard is so pivotal. Because with just JaVale McGee only averaging about 16 minutes a game, all right, you never know when you'd have to play Anthony Davis out of position to be down there banging and doing other things that he may not particularly want to do. Having Dwight Howard to spell for JaVale McGee allows Anthony Davis to be the finesse player he wants to be. Yeah, he'll dunk on you. He'll catch alley-oops, he'll rebound, he'll block shots. But when you're going up against a brother like Montrezl Harrell that's going to get all in your mug and be physical, all right, when you got that stuff going on, it could potentially work against you because you got to remember, and KP, you notice the one question mark about Anthony Davis is his willingness to be physical. He came on this show and heard and admitted he had heard all the chirping in the offseason, which was why he got in the gym, got a little big, a little bulkier, to show that he was going to be ready for that physicality that was going to come his way. Dwight Howard helps in that department significantly because it takes some of the load off of Anthony Davis, frees him up to be as much of Anthony Davis as he can possibly be. And I think that's why I'm still sticking with the Lakers. It's a big-time move why Dwight Howard, as I reported, by the way, a week ago, had elected to, you know, officially announce to Don Lemon last night he's going to join the Lakers with the bubble. Thank goodness he's doing that because I think that helps the Lakers immensely.
Hey, I'm with you, Stephen A. Smith. Guess what? If I'm the Lakers, I'm doing this. Whew, thank God. Because when you think about the Los Angeles Lakers, the first two names that come to mind was LeBron James and Anthony Davis. The next person that people was talking about was Dwight Howard. The impact that he's had on this team throughout this season has been phenomenal. We're talking about a guy that's 265, 6% body fat, a physical specimen, and still, in year 16, is one of the most athletic bigs in the league today. So you know what that goes to tell me? That goes to tell me when LeBron James is calling them up for a high pick and roll, that he got a dynamic roller, a serious live threat, where they got to pick a player, pick or choose. You either go stop LeBron, or he livening it up to the rim to Dwight, who's, by the way, finishing very well at the rim, and by the way, do a great job of stealing little guys and finishing with right and left hooks over the shoulder and making and ones. Look at him on the defensive end. Oh, let me tell you this. He also plays the dunker better than anyone in the league. I love how Anthony Davis and LeBron James, when they play high pick and roll, he hit Dwight Howard Anthony Davis in the pocket, and then they play that big to big passing, and Anthony Davis have so much confidence in Dwight Howard. Now take it to the defensive end. When Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard are on the court together, they are the best defensive front line in the league. And I'm going to go back to a game where I watched them play the Denver Nuggets right before the All-Star break, and Frank Vogel switched it up. He said, you know what? I'm going to start Dwight Howard, and I'm going to put him on Jokic. And what he did, he dominated Jokic. I mean, in his sample size, he was a star in his role, but in the fourth quarter, he locked him up. I mean, put him in a body bag. And then on the other end, he gave him about 14 points and 11 rebounds, and he was the unsung hero in that game. So, yes, listen, no discredit to the Clippers. I understand people keep saying, yeah, they have a lot of rough riders. Yeah, they got Patrick Beverley, and they got a lot of dogs. But you know what the Lakers got? They got a lion in LeBron James. They got a tiger in Anthony Davis. And they got a bear who's a beast in Dwight Howard. So give me that three right there any day of the week, and that's who I'm rolling with. And that's why I got the Lakers as my favorite to win this championship.
You know who'd be proud of Dwight right now, guys? My mind goes there. I just can't help it. LeBron has gotten Dwight Howard to play a version of what Kobe wanted Dwight Howard to play when Dwight got to the Lakers. Kobe wanted Dwight Howard to captain the defense. Don't worry about his points. He'll get his points in the flow of the game. He didn't Kobe was going to be the featured player on offense, and Dwight would be the kind of captain of the defense.
No,
and
no,
LeBron's
no,
got him.
No,
maybe
no,
at a different
Max,
stage
you,
in no. Dwight's career, all that is true. But no. He's got him playing the way Kobe was begging him to play back then.
No, Max, that's not true. When Kobe and Dwight paired up,
not true.
Dwight was in his prime. Dwight was still a superstar. That is not true for the simple fact that Dwight Howard got Dwight Howard playing the way that it is. Being out of the league, being out of the league is what got
there
Dwight
you go.
Howard playing the way
that's
being a
it.
Star in this role. Not no LeBron James. You give that credit to Dwight Howard because being out the league, I can contest to this.
When I'm not
I
taking credit away from him.
Calls, those two. Listen, hey, Max, I'm teaching you something. Sit back and relax. I'm going to tell you this. When I was out the league for 2 years and my phone wasn't ringing and I was forced to retire, I had to check myself because my last year in the Pelicans, I wasn't trying to be a locker room guy. I wanted to play minutes. Being out the league humbles you. So Dwight Howard gets all the credit, not nobody else. He had a reality check, and he embraced his role, and that's why he's one of the best
scorers. That's where I was going, Kendrick, because what I was going to say is that, listen, I'm not trying to take any credit away from LeBron James. Lord knows he deserves a boatload of credit for a lot of things, and in my opinion, he receives it. But as it pertains to Dwight Howard, no, that's not about LeBron James. That's about the fact that LeBron, after his stint in Charlotte, there were a lot of things that were being said about Dwight Howard, going from Orlando to L.A., to Houston, to Charlotte, to Washington. There were an awful, awful, awful lot of questions about him on and off the court, and his career was in grave jeopardy. So when he landed with the Lakers for only $2.5 million, okay, that humbled him like you know what. That is what got Dwight Howard on the straight
and narrow.
And he's
also in his 16th year, as you guys mentioned. And I'm not claiming you give LeBron credit ahead of Dwight or ahead of circumstances, but I do think it makes a difference when the superstar of the team is a really, even though LeBron can score, is really a pass-first mentality, particularly this year. And Dwight is now, I'm not focused on what LeBron did, I'm focused on the irony that Dwight is now playing on LeBron's team.
You have a point if Dwight was playing 30 minutes a night.
The way Kobe wanted him to play back then.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
I don't know how. I mean, they gave us some names and phrases to put on the back of jerseys. That was terrible. It was just, it's a bad list, bad choice. They didn't give players a chance to, voice their opinion on. They just gave us a list to pick from, So, that was bad. That's terrible.
All right, that was Sixers forward Mike Scott calling the NBA jersey decision a bad miss. Kendrick Perkins still here with us. Stephen A., I'll start with you. What's your reaction to Mike's comments?
Well, I agree with him, and I'm very disheartened. I want to emphasize that, or it's important to preface my comments by saying I didn't really know much about this subject until this morning when I woke up. And I haven't spoken to anybody from the league office, so I'm just reacting based off of what the sound that we just got from Mike Scott and what I read. But I haven't spoken to anybody about the NBA about this. I would tell you, here's where I'm most disheartened. Why is it that the NBA would come up with ideas for guys in like 15 separate categories, separate slogans, or whatever the hell you want to say, and have them pick from that? That doesn't speak to the issue. But more importantly than that, what I want to say to Mike Scott and all these NBA players who are hell-bent on having a voice when they go to this bubble, you know what? I said this to you, Max, before when I talked about symbolic gestures. I'm not trying to act like they mean nothing. Of course, it has its place. But when you talk about really, really getting stuff done, I don't give a damn about names on a jersey, slogans on a jersey. I don't care about acronyms on a jersey or anything like that. I don't care about Roger Goodell kneeling, with the NFL players if it came to that. I don't care about that nearly as much as I care about things like federal legislation to make the shooting of an unarmed black man by a police officer a federal hate crime. I don't care about that as much as I care about players collaborating with these high-powered white individuals along with lobbyists to go on Capitol Hill and to legislate laws. I don't care about that as much as I care about finding out who are the companies that blacks patronize and who pour money into the sport. Ask them what they're doing for the black community and see if you can partner with them to create more opportunities for those from disenfranchised communities throughout every single NBA city that exists. I care about that far more than I care about symbolic gestures. But I will say that the NBA, if it's true what Mike Scott said, and I don't know that to be the case, but if it's true and they basically just gave them choices and stuff like that, that doesn't necessarily fly. That's not a good look. And oh, Molly, as an aside, I would also say I'm hearing a lot of rumblings. A lot of people have reached out to me over the last 24 hours talking about how the NBA players themselves are treated vastly different than WNBA players. A lot of people in the WNBA, I'm hearing some noise about the treatment that they're receiving. The hotel rooms might be fine, but the laundry facilities and things of that nature,
I mean,
it's like considerably less than what NBA players are being treated like. These kind of things will be very problematic for the NBA, because when you say WNBA, it's not like people are going to separate that from the NBA when it comes to something like this. It's going to be all intertwined. So the NBA might need to be aware of that and make sure they address that quick, fast, and in a hurry, because there are rumblings that are proliferating.
Not surprising and not okay.
I disagree about this. I would say that you and I emphasize different parts of this, Stephen A. So not so much as that we disagree. I think that symbols can be powerful and are important, but not if the addressing of those symbols is used as cover for not changing systemic problems. Not if what you talk about, this becomes a federal hate crime, even if that legislation was passed, that meant no real criminal justice reform or conditions of parole, you know, being addressed, things like that, because the industrial prison complex is a much greater issue, in fact, in terms of social justice than simply police brutality, right? But one is a more an emotive kind of issue and a surface issue, and the other is more important and systemic. So insofar as symbols and names on jerseys and all those things are cover for not really making change, then you and I agree. But I do think that they can be powerful messages socially that can lead to change and also sometimes reflect a change happening underneath. So again, I would just emphasize a different part of that. And in terms of Mike Scott's specific kind of grievance here, I would say it's analogous to what I just said. It's good that the NBA is saying, hey, you can put messages on your jerseys, but if by selecting from a pool of pre-approved messages is a way of actually controlling what the NBA players say, then that's not as good. If that's a way of co-opting a movement rather than really being allied with the movement, then that's not as good. And then Mike Scott has a point.
And listen, I don't disagree with Mike Scott, right? If that's true, right? He has a valid point. But my thing is not what you do, is how you do it. And much credit to Adam Silver and the NBA, because they have relentlessly been working hand in hand with the Players Association and Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts. Something that I've never seen in my 17 years of being around the NBA. Now, with that being said, my thing is to Mike Scott is call the Players Association, get Michelle Roberts on the phone, get Chris Paul on the phone, talk this thing through before you go out and make a public statement, because I'm pretty sure Adam Silver and the NBA just didn't say, here's the list. No, they contacted the Players Association and they was working hand in hand. So if I'm Mike Scott, contact the Players Association and Chris Paul, man, behind the scenes and figure out what's going on and then voice your opinion. Because here's the problem that I have. It's been multiple years that I've went to, you know, the Players Association meetings, and there's only been 5 to 10 guys in there out of 400 and whatever players, right? And all of a sudden, guys come out and be complaining about certain things that's going on, but then when they have their time to do so, they don't show up to meetings, or they don't reach out, or don't answer emails, or don't answer phone calls. So I'm not disagreeing with Mike Scott. I'm just saying it could have been handled differently. That's my only thing. As far as with the jerseys, hey, listen, the NBA is in a bad situation. Damn if they do, damn if they don't. I'm looking at it as it's a great starting point, right? They doing something to move forward. Now, is it the end? No, this is just the beginning, but at least they're trying to do something and making this a priority. That's my opinion.
Well, let me say this. First of all, KP, I appreciate that point about those meetings because, as you know, I've been covering collective bargaining negotiations since 1995. Mm-hmm. So I know for a fact that you're 1,000% right. The absence of participation on the part of a vast majority of NBA players, it is just a fact. There is no way around that. That's first of all. Secondly, however, mm-hmm. we don't know if Mike Scott didn't communicate with anybody. He might have been on the phone with somebody. He might have had that conversation. We don't know that. Third, Adam Silver is a phenomenal commissioner, and we all revere the job that he has done, succeeding the great David Stern in taking this league to yet another level, and Adam Silver deserves all the props in the world. But a legitimate argument could be made that for legitimate reasons, he's clearly been preoccupied with other things, and this particular issue might not have been that high on his priority list compared to all of the other things that has to get done in order for them to get ready for this bubble kind of atmosphere. And last but not least, Max, I totally get mm-hmm. your point. I'm not disagreeing with the importance of symbols. What I'm saying to you is that as a black man, 52 years of age, being on this earth, I've seen many, many, many instances where those gestures is all it was, a gesture to appease the masses, quiet things down, quell momentum, and then a month, 2 months, 6 months, a year down the line, we complaining about the same things over and over. I am saying that with white America standing up, listening, acknowledging the fact that it's a conversation that they need to have and they need to be comfortable having and what have you. Now more than ever before, one could make the argument that white folks in positions of power are listening more than they ever have. So if that's the case, then have a definitive ask instead of all of these ambiguous, vague things or symbolic things that we want mm-hmm. that don't amount to much if the other stuff don't come along with it.
Understood and agreed, Stephen A.
We'll leave it on that note. I didn't have chance to read all the approved social messages. I did see them on the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Sage had them last night. Mark Spears was the one who put it all out there. So if people do want to see those messages, they are available to see them online.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, our Bubble or Nothing series continues today with a look at the Memphis Grizzlies season, who currently sit at the 8th seed in the East with a 3.5-game lead and 8 games remaining. They're 56.3 points per game in the paint, lead the league, but they are at a 500-1 odds to win it all, that according to Caesars. Kendrick Perkins back here with us. Max Kell, you're up first. What do you think? Are the Grizzlies going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they will. I'm going to say yes, and I understand if they don't have a 4-game lead, there's going to be a play-in, and they're going to have some tough teams. Sacramento's been very hot, and of course the Pelicans and the Trailblazers. If you look at Portland's starting five, it's no joke, especially the way Carmelo's been playing, because that adds a real piece to what they already had, and they were about a piece short in recent years. So I get all that. I don't know that the Grizzlies will avoid a play-in game, but I'm going to say they're going to win it, and the reason they're going to win it, all respect due to Damian Lillard. But people, Ja Morant is a special kind of talent. And unlike Zion, he will have the ball in his hands in the moment of truth. And Jaren Jackson Jr., by the way, he was a guy in that draft I thought had the highest floor. You know, like I mentioned Jamal Adams a couple weeks ago, how I said at that draft you could have taken him one overall, because when you draft in the top 10, you'd like a Hall of Famer. And Adams was going to be, if not, he might not be the best player in the draft, but he had the highest floor. Jackson's like that. Real good player already, only 20 years old. But mainly it's Ja Morant. And the kind of, you know, like he to me, guys, is like a combination of two very different kinds of players. You know, like I've said, Russell Westbrook, if Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson had a baby, it'd be Russell Westbrook. Or if Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson did it, it would be LeBron James. Ja Morant is like the timing and patience and passing of like a D'Angelo Russell, but with the explosion and aggression and speed of a Westbrook, which is very different kind of players to put in the same guy, but he has it all already. And I'm going to say, in the moment of truth, if it comes down to it, that kid, that young man with the ball in his hands is going to get it done. I'm going to say they're going to the playoffs.
I disagree. I like Memphis a lot. I think they got a lot of young talent. I think that Ja Morant is a star, and I think that he'll be a superstar in this league sooner rather than later. But I look at the experience of the Portland Trail Blazers. I look at the talent that exists on the Pelicans. We keep forgetting about the kind of year that Brandon Ingram was having, first-time All-Star, averaging better than 24 points per game, shooting better than 46% from the field, 38% from three-point range. I can't ignore that. And then I'm looking at a guy like the Jrue Holidays of the world, the J.J. Reddicks of the world and others. So they've got talent and experience, and I'm going to go that route. That's how I feel about it. I think the thing that really buffers my point more than anything is the specter of a play-in game. Now, if it was just something as simple as, okay, you got to catch and eclipse the Memphis Grizzlies in order to get in, even though they're just 3.5 games up, that would be a different story. But the fact that there's a specter of a play-in game with so much on the line, considering the youth that exists on Memphis, even though they do have Valanciunas, but considering the youth that they have on their squad compared to the talent and experience that the other two teams have, like a Portland, like a New Orleans, I'm going to go with that route. I think that Memphis will be in the picture. I think they'll battle. They got a lot of heart and skills. I just don't think this is their time. We could all be wrong, because who knows who's been preparing in this hiatus, who was disciplined enough to really, really take care of themselves, you know, and have themselves prepared for this bubble. That we can't predict that. But in the end, if I'm just looking at it based on talent and experience, I'm going to go the route of either of those teams ahead of the Memphis Grizzlies because of a play-in game.
This one is hard, because I love the Memphis Grizzlies. When you look at them, like Stephen A., you and I talked about last week about how Ja Morant is a generational talent, but you also looking at a young stud, a nice two-way piece in Dylan Brooks, who's been playing phenomenally this year. And then, by the way, you're looking at Big Giannis. He's been an unsung hero for them. The emergence of Jaren Jackson Jr. They also have a guy by the name of Josh Jackson, who basically Phoenix gave up on. But this kid was playing well before the pandemic. The only reason that I'm not rolling with Memphis is because of the format and the scheduling. They have one of the toughest schedules. And to me, I think the format went against them, meaning, you know, a team having to finish in a ninth spot, have to finish within four games. And I got to give a slight edge to the Pelicans. Why? You're looking at Zion Williamson, right, who's a box office kid. But people don't give Zion enough credit. He plays winning basketball. You know, I see him diving on the floor for loose balls, second efforts, deflections, blocking shots. You know, he plays winning basketball. He did it in high school. In the sample size of 19 games with the Pelicans, you're looking at a first-time All-Star in Brandon Ingram, who, in my opinion, is one of the most prolific scorers in the league. By the way, LeBron and Rondo both warned me about Brandon Ingram last year and was like, B.I. is that guy. Then I'm looking at a veteran leader like J.J. Redick, like you said, Stephen A., a guy who never missed the playoffs, a guy who's a knockdown shooter, who's a competitor. He don't get enough credit for the heart that he brings to the team. And then you talking about one of the most underrated guys in the league is Jrue Holiday, who could give you 25 to 30 points on one end and lock you up on the end.
Who could lock you down.
And then let's talk about Lonzo.
Yeah,
who could lock you up.
And when it matters
most.
And then
you talk about Lonzo Ball. Hey, and we talking about Lonzo Ball. Listen, I was hard on the kid, you know, the first part of this season, but he's turned around a complete 360, and he's finally, not only is he living up to LaVar Ball hype, but he's living up to the hype of a number two pick. And with him and Jrue Holiday in that backcourt,
I would not go that far.
They are very dangerous. Stephen A., he's been balling lately, brother. He's been balling. Listen, I got to give
Lonzo,
him this flower.
His team. Lonzo
he's been
Ball.
Balling. Go.
Lonzo Ball is no scrub. Max Kellerman deserves a lot of credit, because Max Kellerman gave him a chance from day one. My knock against him and why I argued vehemently with Magic Johnson against drafting him number two overall, I thought he was drafted number two overall strictly because he was from Chino Hills and he starred at UCLA. I thought De'Aaron Fox should have been the point guard taken ahead of him. I thought that should have been the Lakers pick, and I
agree.
Still ain't changing that to this very day for only one reason. It's not just about Lonzo's skills, because I think Lonzo can play. I think Lonzo lacks the level of assertiveness necessary to be that dude, which is something we don't worry about with Ja Morant. By the way, guys, I got some news for y'all real quick, just to make sure I got, just to make sure I get this out of the way. I got a source based on our last conversation, in the previous segment when we were talking about Mike Scott. The NBA texted me, just said, so you know, we didn't create a list and give it to the players. We've been working with the union, and that process is still ongoing. So they've been working with the union, like you said,
that's
KB.
That's what I'm saying.
Nothing definitive has happened. It's just that so Mike Scott might have jumped the gun a little bit in thinking that it was a foregone conclusion when it's still a process that's ongoing, and it's the league who's been working with the union, and they haven't given any list. So let's make sure we get that info out there.
All right, but before we go, listen, I love the Memphis Grizzlies. The only reason I'm not picking them is because I said before, the format and their scheduling. I think everything going down to the bubble is in the Pelicans' favor. That's the only reason why.
I hear what you're saying, okay. Perk, but there are two things that have to happen for the Grizzlies not to get in. One, they can't pick up half a game on the other teams. They got to either stay there or lose ground. That could go either way. Even if you think it's more likely to go one way, you also have to, so that has to happen first. Then they have to actually lose the play-in game. You know, so they are in a better position than any of the other teams. And I don't think it's cut and dried. I think it comes
close among
these teams.
They're not, Max.
All of them.
They're not, Max, because they got a hard schedule, Max. They got a very hard schedule. If you look at, if you compare their schedule to the Pelicans, they got a tough schedule. So
sure.
That's the only reason
why. But first they got to lose ground. First, they got to lose a little ground instead of gain, and then they got to lose the playing game. Two things got to happen for them to get knocked out.
All right, John Morant averaging 18 points per game and 7 assists. Perk, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We will talk to you soon. It's actually this afternoon by this time. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Meanwhile, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones has yet to make a statement since the death of George Floyd and the growth of the Black Lives Matter movement. Dallas defensive tackle Dontari Poe told Bleacher Report that he plans to kneel during the national anthem and called out his team's owner for his recent silence, saying, quote, "Haven't talked to Jerry at all. I hope he comes out and shows his support. You are an owner of an NFL team. You get what I'm saying? The majority of this team are these people that are being oppressed. So even if you're not going to be in the forefront, we need to know we have your support in that type of way." Stephen A., floor is yours.
Well, absolutely. He's absolutely correct. And I think it's a damn shame that a guy that used to play for the Kansas City Chiefs that spent last year with the Carolina Panthers, if I remember correctly, this is the guy that is in his first year as a Dallas Cowboy, and he's speaking out. We ain't heard nothing from Zeke Elliott. We ain't heard anything from Dak Prescott. We haven't heard anything from DeMarcus Lawrence as it pertains specifically to Jerry Jones speaking out. Now, I've said it before and I said it again. Listen, I don't hate the Cowboys. I can't stand their fans and I will never deviate from that. I've always said they're the most disgusting, nauseating fan base in American history. I mean it with every single fiber of my being. Anytime they're miserable or during the holiday seasons on Thanksgiving and Christmas, it works for me because that's how much I despise Cowboy fans. I have no problem with the organization, and I actually am very fond of Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. I have profound respect for Jerry Jones and his business acumen and his marketing genius. He is something special. But on this particular issue, where the hell is he? I don't want to hear anything, and I'm not going to let up every chance I get. every time I get an opportunity to address it, I'm going to address it with one simple question. Where the hell is Jerry Jones? Where is he? You were around. You're always around magnifying yourself to the camera. You were certainly around with the whole Colin Kaepernick situation. And this is the key point to remember about Jerry Jones. We have no problem with what you feel. Whatever it is you feel, he doesn't stop there. He tells you what anybody wearing his uniform will do. He talks about whether it's racial oppression and inequality, whether it's kneeling and the issue being hijacked by the president of the United States and political pundits making it into an issue of patriotism and the flag when that's what it was never about. Jerry Jones co-signed all of that. And he went right along with it and said none of his players will kneel. It will not happen. And they didn't do it until the president called them sons of bees. And as a result, they came together on a Thursday night, and Jerry Jones, along with those players, took a knee in unity with the other teams at that particular moment in time. But even then, of the 1,600-plus players on an NFL roster, only about 200 took a knee. Jerry Jones has maintained his position, and he has not just spoken for himself. He has spoken for the organization, and he has spoken basically against any player who would even think of doing such a thing. But now that all of this stuff has happened since George Floyd's murder, because that's exactly what it was, murder, Jerry Jones is nowhere to be found. My last point is this, Max. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I am not saying that Jerry Jones should say specifically anything. I'm not saying what side he should take. I'm not saying what point he should express. What I'm saying is silence is not an option when it comes to Jerry Jones. It should not be allowed. We should know where he stands on this issue because he lets us know where he stands with everything else. You're white, you're a billionaire, you're powerful, and you're in your 70s. What the hell are you hiding for? Come on out, Jerry. Come on out, Jerry Jones. Come on out so we can see you and we can hear you. We hear you with everything else. We see you with everything else. Where is Jerry Jones? And it's a damn shame that I got to ask this question instead of his teams. Thank goodness for Dontari Pope and thank goodness for my man that came over there. Well, I forgot my brain freeze right here. That came from Tampa Bay that's now on the Cowboys that was on our show the other week.
Defense.
Gerald McCoy.
You're talking about?
That's it. Gerald McCoy. Thank God for those two. Gerald McCoy. Where the hell is everybody else at on the Dallas Cowboys? They got nothing to say? Go ahead, Max.
Stephen A., you've been saying this. You were saying this weeks before anyone else. I give you credit for that. And in the case of the two players you just mentioned, and McCoy, not that long ago, a superstar player, they're imports, right? They just got there. And so maybe that has something to do with the fact that they feel more comfortable talking publicly about it as it relates to Jerry Jones, because that's what's going on right now. Everyone is putting their kind of finger in the wind to see which way it's blowing, and especially Jerry Jones, who's concerned about his business. As you know, Stephen A., from my positions on this show, I don't use that as an excuse for being on the wrong side of social issues, right? But Jerry Jones is clearly about his bottom line, whatever his personal preferences are. And so far in his career as the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, the kind of prevailing winds have mirrored, it seems to me, his personal preferences from public comments he's made about why he supports certain candidates for election and such. And right now we're at a time in our history where those winds that had prevailed are changing. And I think the reason he hasn't spoken yet is because he doesn't know what to say to make sure, quote unquote, both sides continue to patronize his product. And he's trying to figure that out right now. How can he support one side and not alienate them without alienating the other side? Well, and by side, I mean people who want social justice versus people who want to maintain the status quo.
Max, there's two reasons why that is completely unacceptable if that is what Jerry Jones is doing. A, because he's stopping the Cowboys from doing anything. In other words, there's players on the Cowboys. This is America's team, right? America's team, the number one brand in sports, arguably, and there's no players that have come out and have been vehement about what's going on and what needs to be done in terms of the Cowboys organization, in terms of the NFL as a body. You gotta take that into consideration. Where the hell are the Cowboys? That's number one. And number two, again, it's because he's Jerry Jones. And if he was Jerry Jones but didn't stop his players from doing anything, but he was about his bottom line, there's no crime in that. Well, but he has been vehement about stopping them. He cannot get away with being silent. He could say and feel whatever he wants.
Only because we got to go have a question for you.
Down with it. He can't get away with being silent. He cannot get away with that.
I agree. But here's a question, and you can take it rhetorically or you can answer it. Why is Dan Snyder, who was defiant for years and kept a racist name of his team, suddenly talking about kind of obeying the will of the people? Why? Because he got hit in the pocketbook. Well, that's why. And when will Jerry Jones speak?
But the flip side is, Max, guess what? How often do you hear Daniel Snyder speaks? He's usually hiding under the radar while he's about his money. Jerry's in our face. That's why I'm calling out Jerry Jones. It ain't because he's the owner of the Cowboys. It's because he's in our face all the time talking to us, and it's because he's been in everybody's face telling you what the Cowboys would not do in opposition to what everyone else believes should be done. And you got these players
just ready to come at me
and other people, but you ain't got nothing to say.
I think Jerry Jones needs to come on First Take and answer some questions. That's the only solution that I see.
You know, I go to Dallas. He don't even have to come on First Take. I fly to Dallas and interview Jerry Jones myself, and it don't even have to be on his yacht.
I'm sure
I go right in the Cowboys locker room if he wants.
Please
to
don't
right
fly
in front
anywhere.
Of the players and interview them. They lucky I ain't asked them for an interview, cause they got some explaining to do.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
You just heard it. Patrick got paid. The Super Bowl MVP Mahomes signs a 10-year deal worth up to $503 million with incentives. The deal will keep him in Kansas City through the 2031 season. He still had 2 years remaining on his current contract. 31% of his contract is guaranteed. And as just mentioned, the Chiefs are having a press conference at 1:30 Eastern today. You can check that out on SportsCenter. They will have you covered. Tim Hasselbeck joining us. Tim, always good to see you. We will get to you in just a moment. Max, I'll start with you on this one. Which player do you think benefits the most from this Patrick Mahomes signing, or extension, rather?
Well, I was going to say Lamar Jackson when I first saw this question, because he's the other really special talent. But I got to tell you, the player who benefits the most is Patrick Mahomes, but not for the reasons you think. Not because, oh, he's going to get all this money. It's for the money he left on the table, guys. That's why he's going to benefit. Because, look, the owners won the CBA, and they've been winning CBAs since the start of collective bargaining in the NFL. So there's a limited pool of money that the players get. They're not going to be actually based on their market value, right? So that's the system you're dealing with. And now the question is, do you reach for every penny, even at the expense of the team around you? Or if you're a transcendent talent like Mahomes, do you set the market? Do you get the highest paid guy? But structure it in such a way that you can put a great team around you and theoretically keep one there throughout the, let's say this deal actually plays out 10 years, throughout the next decade, and challenge for the Super Bowl every year. That's what Mahomes did, guys. I know everyone's thinking, of course he benefits because of the money. Yes, but if Mahomes wanted to play hardball, I'm quite sure he could have tied, you know, what he made to a percentage of the cap in later years and done all that stuff. They didn't. They signed a reasonable deal that helps keep the team competitive. And as a result, he has a chance now to go down in history when all is said and done. He's a long way from there, but he has a chance to be known as the greatest football player who ever lived. He still has that chance, and I think it's largely as a result of this contract.
The name that comes to my mind, obviously I thought about Lamar Jackson as well, but I also thought about Deshaun Watson. I thought about Deshaun Watson in Houston because he's everything to that franchise. We know this. We love and appreciate everything that J.J. Watt is, not just as a player, but as a person. We know they have some talent on that squad as well. But Deshaun Watson is really the face of that franchise. Let's just call it like we see it. If it were not for him, we wouldn't even be thinking about the Houston Texans that much. And then when you take into account some recent issues that Bill O'Brien has had with the franchise, whether it's a GM being removed, whether it's players not having their extensions granted or anything like that, there's been a lot of question marks about the Houston Texans under the stewardship of Bill O'Brien. But where it fades away is once the games start playing, because he's got somebody like Deshaun Watson to come to his rescue and really deliver the goods to keep them above water and as a respectable franchise and a playoff team. So in light of that reality and his significance and what he means to the Houston Texans, considering what Patrick Mahomes means to the Kansas City Chiefs, let me tell you something. Deshaun Watson is no Patrick Mahomes, but if there's somebody that's got superstar potential written all over them who could be rivaling Patrick Mahomes in the future, it ain't just Lamar Jackson. It's Deshaun Watson, too.
Yeah, I think Watson benefits. I think, you know, to an extent, Dak does. But I think still also kind of hurts those guys. Look, word is that Watson wanted a 3-year deal, that Dak wants a 4-year deal, not a 5-year deal. And so Patrick Mahomes signing a 10-year extension, and by the way, really not getting much money up front for it, I don't know that that's necessarily good for any of these quarterbacks that are due a deal on the horizon. Sure, you know, the average, you know, per year is going to go up, and that's going to help guys at the position. But guys, think about this. Over the next 3 years, Patrick Mahomes is going to make the same money as Teddy Bridgewater. Like, to me, Patrick Mahomes, if you're going to give up your rights for this long, you need to get something. Like, if you care about time value of money and compounded interest, like you need to get more now for doing this deal. To me, it's just so long. Put it this way. You go back to 2010. Peyton Manning is the highest paid player in 2010, 10 years ago, on a contract where his average per year was $14 million. We're like triple that at this point. So I like to think about 10 years from now, quarterbacks with you know, new media deals, the influx in terms of how gambling is going to affect the sport, like quarterbacks might be making $80 million a year at that point, might be making more than that at that point. This one to me, I'm never going to be critical of somebody that puts pen to paper on a deal that's going to give them $500 million. So I'm not being critical in that respect. But I think you also have to look at it from the standpoint of, like, what are you doing for your future, your family's future,
Matt,
beyond
probably
that? And, Max, I get the point about trying to cement your legacy. The guy's in his mid-20s. He's got plenty of time to worry about that, and there have been plenty of good quarterbacks that have made a lot of money and have made the talent around them better without just taking less money.
I'm sure, look, he'll be, what, 34 when the deal is over? Like, you know, he can rework it. They probably will if he stays healthy and as great as we all think he can be. Right. Okay, but they'll probably rework it at some point if he turns out to be justifying the deal and all that. Here's the bottom line. The players get the same percentage of the money altogether. So resetting the market doesn't help the players versus the owners. It helps your position versus other positions. Quarterbacks are already overpaid. Teams that pay their quarterbacks sometimes are in trouble because they've overpaid that position. Now, Mahomes is the best of the bunch. So he could have shattered the market and reset, because the quarterback market's going to reset anyway. It's going to go up anyway. He could have done it out of proportion to what it would have been, right? And he would have shifted even more money toward quarterbacks, which is a bad trend. In fact, he just broke the record as a normal guy, more or less. Would the next guy up would break it, maybe a little bit more than that. And down the road, actually didn't tie it to the percentage of the cap, so maybe it actually, the quarterback market falls a little bit more back in line. That's a good market correction. Like, right now, quarterbacks get too much as a percentage of the cap, and Mahomes feels obviously satisfied with the half billion if he earns it all, at least $140 million guaranteed, and I think has done a good thing here for himself, considering his team will be able to put a winner around him, theoretically.
Well, that's from a general perspective, macro perspective, and I get where you're coming from, Max. But what I would say to you to rebut that is that, again, what Tim brought up is a good point, because you've got Deshaun Watson. He wants a 3-year deal, similar to what, you know, Laremy Tunsil signed with the Texans in April for like $76.3 million. Why? Because they're looking at no labor strife. You got a new 10-year collective bargaining agreement. They see how the sport has exploded over the last 10 years. Tim just highlighted what Peyton Manning was making in 2010 and how it's triple that now, at least damn near, for, you know, a lot of NFL quarterbacks. And if you're Deshaun Watson, if you're the Dak Prescott of the world and people like that, you're anticipating that in 4 years from now, it's going to be vastly different. The landscape is going to be vastly different than what it is right now. And so as a result of that, again, we're looking at Patrick Mahomes in terms of the total number. We're not paying as much attention to the guarantees. We're thinking about the length of those contracts and how it might compel teams to be even stronger willed about getting guys signed the long-term deal, which is where negotiations could go awry. So I get where Tim is coming from on that.
Listen, sure. The part of the key is when you get your money. Like, there's a reason why you guys want it up front, is they want to put it to work. They want to make it useful in that regard. And so when you think about the fact over the next 3 years, he's in the Teddy Bridgewater range. When Teddy Bridgewater was barely breaking the threshold of being a starter, you compare that. You think about Kirk Cousins. He signs a 3-year deal, gets $84 million fully guaranteed over the first 3 years of the deal. And then, oh, by the way, guys, he's free again. See, like, that's the part for me that was stunning to this. It wasn't that, hey, it was a 10-year deal. It was that, wait a second, you didn't literally load him up with money right now for it. Like, there has to be some trade-off for that. Like, who knows? Maybe it's an agent that's eager to get a deal because he knows other agents are after him. You never know. But that one was surprising to me.
Or the uncertainty of the future because of this pandemic, because of the economy, et cetera, that this idea that the TV money will only ever go up in the future, maybe some are having second thoughts.
Tim, I want to ask you this, because you're the first person to bring that up, and I think it's a really interesting point. So he got $63 million guaranteed. That's like sixth amongst quarterbacks. With the signing. He got $140 guaranteed.
Over the next three.
We know that's the most right now. Yeah, amongst quarterbacks. But this is what I want to ask you. Do you think it actually would have been more advantageous, to the point that you're making, to sign a shorter deal and then have the player option where he could get out? Because sometimes we look at these long contracts and they sound amazing, and then you're stuck in them, and you're right, the market changes.
Deals don't age well. Like, they don't, because everyone keeps, you know, kind of one-upping it, and especially once the player has the leverage. Look, we probably all agree that Dak Prescott is going to sign a deal that's going to pay him more than players that are probably better than him. But because of where he is and the leverage that he has, he's going to be able to do that. So at some point, you know, when Mahomes is making, you know, a little over $40 million, or even when he's making $50 million, there's going to be another quarterback who has the leverage, who's going to be making more money than him, and he's not going to be a better player. And we're going to look at it and go, wait a second, this is crazy that Patrick Mahomes isn't, you know, making more money than player X. And so I think that when you look at it that way, and you think about guys and why they want to sign shorter deals, and oh, by the way, like, and Max, I get what you're saying about, you know, media deals and the NFL and stuff, but think about the influx, and the impact that gambling is going to now have on the National Football League. Like, there's going to be, I mean, there's no reason to believe that the pot is not going to be bigger for the players. And so, to me, I just like, I'm not against security, long-term, any of that stuff. But again, if you think about, there's a reason these owners aren't signing up, you know, signing these draft picks right now. Like, time value of money, it means something when it is in your own bank account. So deferring it to down the road, you know, when you're giving up your right to free agency was surprising to me.
Tim, I agree with you. He could have gotten more money. He could have gotten a better deal, but that's one of the things I like about
it. Or to get it now.
The position is overpaid. Or, sure, right. That I agree with, but the position is overpaid. He's happy where he is. He's chasing real lasting greatness as a player, maybe one day GOAT status, and he's going to become incredibly wealthy. So the fact that he doesn't shatter the market and bring even more money from other positions to quarterbacks is okay with me. I actually think that's corrective.
Better hope that Andy's still there that whole time, too. That's a big part of it as well.
You ain't lying.
You're right. It's a really long time when you talk about it, because it's actually, you bring up so many great points. It's not even 10 years. It's really 12 years if we're going to factor in the two that he currently has. So, yeah, it's look how much things have changed over this last decade. Look how much things have changed over the last 6 months.
Checking.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays. All right. Be nice, Max. Tim, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate you. Stephen A., Max, I'm Molly. We'll see you all tomorrow.